This is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
This is episode 141 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good evening.
We took a break.
We did. Not on purpose.
No. I mean, there was like a month there where everyone in my family was sick at one point. And then I went on a traveling California retreat happened, and that was awesome. And then I went
Pearly Girl Retreat.
Pearly Girl Retreat. My sister came up. The weather was awesome.
Yes, we had a beautiful weekend in Port Townsend.
It was like 70 something on that Friday.
It was perfect. It was like 70, clear blue sky and a breeze. It's like my dream weather.
Yeah, I like that. It was really good.
Yes.
And me made May's happening, which I always like.
It always gets me inspired, thinking, I'm going to sew clothes, and then I don't.
Cool. I'm glad that works for you every year.
Every June, I buy a whole bunch of sewing supplies, and then...
It never happens. And I just wanted to talk about the outfit along, because I know that this is going to be a last year, and then they're going to take a break. And then I think they're moving what time of year it's going to happen. This year it's Whips. So
why don't you say who they are?
The outfit along is Andy Satterlund and Lauren of Lady Bird. So Andy kind of does the knitting portion and Lauren does the sewing portion.
And it's Lady Bird with two L's. Okay.
And you make an outfit. So you knit a piece, sew a piece, they go together. And kind of
maybe I can finish the ones I bought for the first outfit along.
I mean, that would count.
Oh,
so there's information in the Untangling Knots group on Ravelry, and I think Lauren of Lady Bird posted that on Instagram, and she has a blog called Lady Bird, and it's a Whips this year, so you can
I was going to say, when is it starting?
It starts June 1st.
Okay.
So in the next week or so, I got to decide what I'm going to do. My problem is that, like, I need to get a whip going, because... I've basically finished all the stuff I had as
well. Well, anything that you knit is technically a whip, so...
Yeah. So
it
doesn't have
to be like a lingerer if you're one of those efficient people.
I am one of those. I swatched last year with some Yarn in the House Best Friend, which is like their 75 cotton, 25 wool, and it's a light fingering. So I'm going to do something like a top in that and probably some kind of jeans or... crop jeans, like the polka dot ones I made that I really like for the bottoms. So I think that's the plan.
Awesome.
We'll formulate further. But it's cool because if you have like a work in progress, something that you put in hibernation for a while, you can use that. Or if you like cut out something to sew, but never got around to actually sewing it, or you partially sewed it, you can use that as your whip thing. Oh. Both pieces don't have to be whips. Just one of them.
Maybe I could rework my Holly Byrne skirt that I was talking about. I realized, we were talking at the retreat. I sewed myself, I totally built up a head of steam on sewing clothes, and then I lost 45 pounds. And so everything that I had like been working on, like muslins I'd been working on, things that I had sewn are all now too big. And the Holly Byrne skirt was already a little big when I made it, and now... it's way too big, but it has, it's got a zipper that goes all the way up to the top through the waistband. So I'd really have to like take out the zipper, take off the waistband and the reason, and this is, we were talking about this at the retreat and I left out a crucial bit of information that I need to take the extra out along the front and back seams because there's pockets. So I can't just stitch up the sides.
Right, because that was my thing.
Lose the pockets. So that's why, and I had already taken a little bit out of the center when I was making it, because I realized, like, this is coming out too big. So I really would have to, like, take the whole thing apart and do it all over again, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because, like, I didn't want anybody to really look too hard at that zipper anyway. But that could count as a whip, like dismantling that and putting it back together. And then I have to find something to sew to knit to go with it.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
So there you go. Whips are the outfit along. It starts June 1st. And I think there are prizes and stuff. I always like read some of the threads and then like don't post my finished outfit. But then I have the finished outfit and I wear it. That's great. So that is that. What are you knitting?
All right. Well, at this very second, I'm knitting the Shell Cottage socks, which I had started the last time we were recording together, and you were, I think, knitting on them while we recorded the last time. So I cast these on ages ago, and then they've just been one of these things where I pick them up and I knit a few rounds. So they've gotten a little more attention. I worked on them at the retreat, and I've been trying to keep them by the computer, so they're getting there. But mine are super tight, and I don't know why.
Mine were a little bit tight too, but not.
Jody's were super. Like so squish, and I was, because I was saying that it was such a struggle for me. The stitch pattern has you. Sorry, it's pattern by Helen Stewart. There's three knit stitches, and every fourth round you take the third stitch, pull it over the two stitches, and then do a knit one yarn over knit one. And trying to pull that stitch over, it's like, and every time I like try to remember, like, I'm going to knit really loose this round because the next round I have to pull it over.
It doesn't work.
And it's still just, it's tight. And the, whoa, I'm punching things for emphasis. but even my like, my gauge is really tight on it, which is so weird because I'm usually like a super sloppy loose sock knitter and I have to usually go down many needle sizes. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe these are my first socks in years, years and years. Like I pulled them out at knitting and somebody was like, they'd never seen me knit socks before. That's so weird. They were like, you're knitting socks? You don't knit socks. And I was like, I knit plenty of socks. I just not in the last like 5 years, but so anyway, so there's that. Boring hats, blah. I finished my Rockin' Rose, which is my umpteenth Martina Beam pattern that I started last summer. Finally got that all done. Still haven't blocked it, but it's a chevron kind of offset triangle deal done in...
Is that three colors or two colors?
Four colors?
Four colors.
Four colors, okay. I think. Am I making that up? Three or four? I've already forgotten. It's like, this is me as a knitter. Like, what, I knit something and then I'm like, done! And I set it aside and then I just like move on to the next thing. Terrible. And I finished my Helvetica by Elizabeth Doherty, which was part of her knit along that started, I think, on January 1st and was supposed to end like May
30th. You finished that at the retreat.
I did. And I wove in the ends, but I still haven't blocked it. And I knit that in some custom yarn that's a Corradale. And my only concern with it is that the bottom edge is rolling a little bit. The original was done in
Kestrel,
so a worsted weight linen, because there's not a lot. There's only like two rows of garter, I think, on the bottom to keep the edge from rolling, which I'm sure works really nicely in linen.
It does. I tried on that sample.
Oh, yeah.
Last year at the California retreat. And I'm like, this is so nice.
Yeah, and wool, I think beautiful. It kind of pulls, it rolls a little bit. So I'll see if blocking helps it. Otherwise, I might need to put something in there just to stabilize that edge a little bit. But the fit is really good. I kind of agonized over it. And I ended up, like, I knit one sleeve. And I was just like, oh, I don't think I like the sleeve. And I knit, but I'm like, nah, I'll work on the second sleeve and see how I feel about it. And then I accidentally picked up the wrong number of stitches on the second sleeve, but it was a better number of stitches. It was much fewer. Like shock. I mean, it's a top-down set and sleeve and you already pick up kind of, in my mind, like shockingly few stitches. Usually doing that technique, like I just...
Like half on the vertical and then... It depends on whose method you use.
Right, but it just always feels like, this is not a lot of stitches I'm picking up here. Yeah. Like, for how many stitches you could pick up around an armhole.
Yeah.
You don't pick up that many of them. But on the other side, I picked up, like, way less. And then I started knitting it, and I was like, oh, this fits really well. So then I had to remember in what way I screwed it up so that I could screw it up the same, that rip out the first sleeve and screw it up the same way on the other one. But in the end, it worked out much better. And she says in the book, like, you know, look at the sleeve circumference, and if you want, just pick up the stitches for a smaller size. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at the schematic and thinking, the sleeve for my size seems really large to me. And I had thought, like, oh, maybe I should do a smaller size. But then, being me, I just was like, just plowed through it. So I somehow accidentally... worked my way into making a smaller size and came out really nicely, though. Cool. Fits really well. And then I did... Oh, so we went on a trip to LA, and I wanted to do something, like, really easy knitting for that trip. And I had dyed a skein of yarn in a couple of different colors, so I wanted to try my hand at a planned pooling project where you try, you know, like a yarn that's going to...
Flash or
pool or do weird things where you try to control it a little bit. And you can only manage it so much. There's a cool little kind of calculator. I think it's like plannedpooling.com. Mm-hmm. And basically you knit a repeat of what is dyed on the yarn and count the stitches that you got, and then you plug it in, and then you plug in, like, your stitch count that you want to do for your piece, and whether you're knitting it flat or in the round, and mm-hmm. it gives you a visualization of what it'll do. And mine was fairly accurate, but what would happen was, I think, like, when I knit my sample, of course, I was knitting a little bit tighter, then once I would relax, my gauge would get a little bit looser. And also, my dyeing isn't, like, super-duper regular, so I was saying, like, it was either that the knitter wasn't very good or the dyer wasn't very good, but unfortunately, those were both me. But it ended up coming out kind of cool. Like, it looks deliberate-ish. You know, it was getting little, like, diagonal stripes with it. And then I tried another one with another skein that I had dyed where I really had just dyed it pretty much half and half, like kind of magenta and charcoal-y black. And so I've knit this narrow tube that, and the planned pooling on it, like it's made a very nice regular pattern. It looks cute. And then but I couldn't decide like what I was actually making, whether I was going to just sew it into like put the ends together and make it into a cowl, which is what I did with the first one. I just knit a tube and Kitchener the ends together. And that one was in a DK weight yarn. And the second one was Blue Sky Alpaca Silk. Mm. So it's like a sport weight. So I could have made like kind of this tiny little tubey thing, which might have been a little weird. But I got a vote of approval from Natalie at Knitting, and I think I should split the tube in half. I mean, take two tubes and make them into little arm warmers.
Oh.
Because they're kind of new wave colors and kind of fun. And I might just like sell them. I don't think it's something I would maybe wear. I don't know. Maybe I would wear them. It might be fun. I mean, they would be warm. Okay. So weirdest thing I have knit recently in the last several years, a coworker jokingly sent me a picture of a cat in a weird looking like crochet hat. And she has a cat named Wilbur.
That's a good name for a cat.
I know. And I like it. Unfortunately, we also have a vendor that we all work with a lot at work named Wilbur. So whenever people are talking about Wilbur, it's really confusing if you think they're talking about one of the Wilbers, but they're really talking about the other Wilbur.
Yeah.
Like
Wilbur dropped by today.
I know. Yeah. Or it's like, what? Or, yeah, Wilbur wasn't feeling too good. And so I just let him. Anyway. But this coworker also... delighted me daily this winter because every day she was wearing a different color beret when she'd come to work. I mean, all store-bought, but she had like a whole rainbow of berets. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'm going to make Wilbur a beret. Mm-hmm. So I did. I knit Wilbur a beret out of some yellow Cascade 220. I sort of used a pattern on Ravelry that I think is called like...
Cat
it's called like Marceau International Cat of Mystery or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember what the name is. But that pattern, I just looked at it and I was like, that's definitely way too many stitches for a cat. And then I looked at the comments on the pattern and everybody said like, it's really big. Like could fit a toddler. Cause just simple math told me like, this is going to be way too big. But so I gave it to her and then I made her send me pictures of it. I'm a really pissed off looking cat in a beret. Just fun.
It was fun.
It was cute. And then I also knit Rhenish Amber. I forgot the designer's name. It's a simple cowl. It's basically just a stockinette cowl that has a little cable panel that runs up, really simple cable panel that runs up. And I was knitting it. And someone turned to me and knowing me, they were like, oh, what hat pattern are you making? And I was like, oh, it's not a hat, it's a cowl. And she's like, oh. And then I looked at it and I thought, this does seem kind of small for a cowl. And I thought, okay, I guess it's a hat. So I just made up some sort of decrease thing to go on the top, and voila, it's a hat. And when I posted it, though, the designer wrote back to me saying, oh, that's really funny. When I came up with this pattern, I thought I was going to do a hat, but I couldn't figure out what how to deal with the decreases, so I just made it into a cowl. So she was like, so you brought it full circle. So, and I knit that in a really great skein of yarn from Huckleberry Knits. It's called, oh, I'm going to mix up my skin. I think it was called our American Dream. It's an American Targhee that was dyed in a really gorgeous teal color. So that was cool to have domestic yarn and a local dyer. And it's just a great color. So it was really nice to knit with. I love Targhee. And that's kind of it. I mean, there are, you know, some plain hats thrown in there, but boring, so I won't tell you about
it. Boring.
Them. You don't need to hear about it.
Well, I finished my cottage shell cottage socks by Helen Stewart and Neighborhood Fiber Company Mark Bradford. They were a little snug.
Oh, did I say what I was making? Socks at Rock.
Oh. I'm also knitting with Socks at Rock. Yeah. But in a completely different
I know.
Color.
Mine is like a dark teal.
Mine are like
teal-y
smarty
blue,
colors.
And yours are like sherbet candy colors.
Yes. From 2008 when I didn't knit any of the sock club I was in.
Oh, right.
Yes. I'm just knitting plain stockinette kid socks. This is actually the second pair and the second sock. This is the little shorty I did. And then I did a pair that's like for bigger kids. So I knit Rocky by Tin Can Knits, which are baby pants from the book I talked about last time.
Oh, yeah.
Max and Bodie's Playdate, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they're really cute. You can do extra shaping in the butt for the diaper butt. And they're just like little sweatpants, and you can do a contrast waistband and ribbed ankles. And I use Cedar House yarns in like a brown color, and then a partial skein of something else I haven't had that color in it. Mm-hmm. They're for my sister-in-law's new baby, Edison, which is super cute. I call him Eddie. I don't know if they'll like it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And those are super fast in it. I mean, baby stuff is just so fast, you know, very gratifying and cute. And it's some birthday socks for Noah and this like really nice silk blend yarn that I'd had in my stash also for a very long time. It's like a dark blue black and it just did a 3x1 rib. His birthday was at the beginning of the month. So, and he's worn them. So yay.
Yay.
And that was my bus knitting for a while. Easy for the bus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I knit the Party Top by Abby Knits. And that is in Farmer's Daughter Fibers, Pishkun DK Paul Newman color, which is like a gray. And it's a non-superwash DK base. And you can knit it more like a worsted because it was very bouncy. And I can't remember what the blend is on it, but it's really nice. And the Party Top, it's just a top-down raglan, which I hadn't knit one of those in forever. And it's plain on the body, and it has a little yarn over pattern on the sleeves. And it's cropped, so I can wear it with, like, all my dresses in the winter. And it's 3/4 sleeves.
Cool.
Yeah. I noticed that in some of the pictures that the sleeve depth, what, like, the raglan depth was pretty long, and so the sleeves weren't as fitted as I liked. So what I did was got to the sleeve circumference that I wanted, which was like the size smaller than I was actually aiming for, and then stopped doing the increases and continued the increases for the bust, and then that worked perfectly.
Yeah, cool.
So if you're thinking about making that top, but you're like, oh, the depth is weird in the arms, so it's like not fitted, but also not exaggerated enough to be, like, a feature kind of thing. So, and I noticed in the pattern that the schematic is not in the pattern, but on Ravelry, she has it as one of the pictures. So if you've been thinking about that one, definitely, like, check the schematic in Ravelry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's not on the pattern, unless it just was, like, a layout issue. Like, it would go into 3 pages when she wanted it to be 2, for example. Sometimes that's a weird thing that people do. Oh, and I got the Air Knit Stitches West, so I feel very good that I've knit that. Ooh, and fast. I also knit the Mark Bradford Neighborhood Fiber Company. It was from Stitches West. Like, it was, like, barely in the stash, as opposed to, yeah, the Socks That Rock from 2008.
I have this terrible thing where I never feel like I can knit the new yarn now, because I'm like, but there's all this other yarn that was waiting, like, it always ends up, like, at the back of the list.
I don't feel bad about
it. I know. It's just dumb. I don't know why I do it.
Sometimes the old yarn just needs its moment, like this candy-colored yarn. I'm like, I don't want that. And then Audrey was like, I don't want anything you make for me ever again. Thanks. So I was like, I just had to have a moment where I need that pastel-colored yarn in my life right now. And then you dig through your giant stash, and then... And then there it is. I also knit Ballada by Philippa Carnero, which is a free pattern on Ravelry. And I knit it in Holstgarn Super Soft, which is my first time using that yarn. And I got that at Knit City last year. Mm-hmm. So it's like alternating between all the crap ton of yarn I bought over the past, since last September, I guess. And that is like, they call it like a Shetland style wool. So it's like... not the softest. I wouldn't call it super soft, but I don't have sensitive skin. It's not really scratchy per se. I think it'd be fine if you wanted to hold it together with something that was softer and probably, but it's like so lightweight. It's a light fingering, and if the sweater on a 2 and a 3, and the cardigan is free. It only comes in 3 sizes, which is a problem. 32, 36, and 44, or 32, 38, and, yeah, 32, 38, and 44 bust. But my gauge was smaller, so it ended up being perfect. I wanted a 42-inch bust, and that's what it gave me. So I just knit the largest size as is, and then dealt with the sleeves, because they're knit top-down. Mm-hmm. The pattern is really well-written for a free pattern. Sometimes that's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And it has really good schematics. I think because, so it's a bottom up worked flat, and the front has a lace pattern, but the pattern is kind of like the motif is wide. So I can see why you would have grading problems with that. And I think that's part of what it was. But the back isn't stocking it. And then the sleeves are knit top down and they're long sleeves. So yeah, I changed the gauge, knit the larger size. Everything else I did the same. And the charts aren't written out at all, so you have to be able to read charts to knit it. And then the only other thing I think I changed... oh, I added one repeat to the length, because it was going to be too cropped, like a weird length, because of my gauge difference. And then she has you do the button bands. She has you do, like, the collar and then the fronts, which I don't like. I like the collar to lay on top of the vertical bands.
Yeah.
So just switch that out, and that's a really easy fix. Except that I forgot to put the buttonhole on the top, but I never button my cardigans, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice. I've been wearing that. I mean, today it turned out to be like 74 degrees or whatever. But in my office, I can wear it as like a light spring layer, and it's perfect, even though it's long sleeved. And the pattern's really well written. It's just too bad that it comes in only 3 sizes.
Yeah.
And I finished the Telluride Erin, which I didn't like, and I'm going to donate it. So that's that.
Oh, yeah, you didn't like the way it...
The fit is weird for me. It was, like, kind of too big, but also, like, through the arms it fit well, but it was just, like, too kind of boxy of a shape that I like. And I really don't wear Erin weight sweaters anymore. Yeah. Like, DK is kind of where I top out.
Yeah.
So it's fine. It's beautiful. It turned out great, but I'm just like, I'll just send it with my other donation stuff. Someone else will love it. And I knit 3 bumble hats, also by Tin Can Knits, from that same book. And I pulled out also an old skein of yarn that I've had forever. Spring Tree Creek DK or something. And I ended up knitting not the newborn size, but the infant size. I knit 3 of them and then split the remainder of the yarn into 3 by weight and then used that for the pom-poms. I used 100% of the yarn. It was fantastic. Cool. Let me turn out. They're right here. They're super cute. Ooh. It's like a thermal check pattern.
Ooh, yeah. Cute.
But it's slip stitch.
Yeah.
Not actual check, but.
Cute,
yeah. Cute. I had to trim out the pom-poms a little bit.
Light and fluffy, too.
Yeah. Well, you knit them on like a 10 and a half.
Oh,
for wow. DK.
Yeah. Oh, and then the slip stitches.
Yeah, and then the ribbing's on like a 5 or something. Oh. So, those are super fast. Recommend. Yeah, and I had like a, what are DK weight yarn? DK skeins, like 240 or something
around there.
So I got 3 baby hats out of it. So
that's awesome.
I'll probably send one to my sister-in-law and send the other 2 to my donation place.
Yeah.
And let's see, this is a lot because we had a break and I'm sick. So I had a really bad cold and I was home from work for 3 days. So Demoiselle Arc-en-Ciel by Solène Cuillier, and my neighbors are being loud.
I think you gifted me this pattern.
This one? A long time ago?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes.
Yeah, so it's a worsted weight cardigan that you knit from the top down that has, like, single rows of a stripe in the yoke.
That's the Arc-en-Ciel. It's a rainbow.
Yes. So the cardigan is knit top down and has garter edges. And it has, like, a little bit of a pleat in the back.
Yeah.
Little gathering.
I'll take one of those in these colors. It's a total Jessica gray, and then a little bit of color.
Yeah. And then I haven't sewn pockets on or buttons on it, but it's got a cute little pocket. And I did the lining.
Did you just happen to have all of this like fun colors in your stash?
Yes, this is all stash yarn.
So wait, sorry, did you say what the main yarn is?
The main yarn is Cascade 220, which I knit.
Oh, that's why it looks. Yeah, I have actually knit myself a sweater in that exact color.
So it's drops 103-1 jacket I knit. Mm-hmm. I frogged because I didn't wear it anymore. Yeah. So I just had like, and this is the girl size. It's like size 9-10 or something. So it's a bigger size. And then the stripes, most of them are Cascade 220 Sport, but I held them double because you knit it on like an 8 or something. Except the green is Felted Tweed DK, and the orange is from my Tambourine, Miss Babs. Right.
Yeah.
And then the dark blue is like a silk blend from Knitted Wit, I think. Okay. So I just had partial balls of all of them, and I'm like, oh, perfect. Little rainbow.
Wow.
And then I used 220 Sport for the pocket, and I just cast on extra stitches in between. You know, picked up extra stitches in between, so I could do the lining in that pink color.
Oh, and then you kept it single for this part?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So the lining's not super thick.
Yeah.
So I just have to get, and it's got kind of like, what if it was like bishop sleeves or something? A little, like, gathered sleeve instead of a straight down.
Yes, ever so slightly puffed.
Yes. It's really cute.
It is really cute.
So I knit cute things for other kids.
Lots of cute things.
Not my own, because she doesn't want anything from me.
No. They do that to you.
Yeah. I'm like, do you want to try this on? She's like, no. She only wants to wear black.
I don't know where she'd get that
from. I have no idea. She's my little baby doll.
I'm sure you were totally just a dream at that age and very cool.
I was very pleasant up until like 8th grade.
Oh, okay. You didn't turn into
and then I flipped a switch.
An angry goth until 8th grade.
I wasn't a goth though.
I know. I know you weren't.
I do like the Cure though, so there's that. the last thing I'm knitting is the Beauty School Top by Amy Apple. That's Poison Girls in Union Fiber Company that I bought at Stitches West. And I'm on the sleeves. I just have to figure out what length I'm going to make them.
What does that look like?
It looks like this. It's a top, it's a top down pullover and fingering weight yarn. I was knitting on this at the retreat.
Oh, yeah.
Cute.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm knitting on a 2, I think.
So top down set in sleeves.
Yeah, it's top down set in sleeves.
And then slightly cropped.
Yeah, and this is actually longer than hers.
Oh, okay.
Hers is like very natural waisty, and I added 3 inches because that's what I did for my tongue tied blouse, and I like it.
And then, so what's happening on the sleeves then?
I'm just knitting to 3/4 and then trying it on and then ripping back if I want them shorter. Someone suggested like the just above the elbow short sleeve, and I kind of like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep going, and then I'll try it on, and then rip back the first one, and then I'll know what I'm doing for the second one.
Ta-da.
But it's all done except for the sleeves and the neckline.
And then is there any special treatment on the neckline?
It's just one by one ribbing to match the bottom.
So simple, but I
can't. Yeah. So that's also good for spring weather and layering, which is the thing I like.
Yes.
The thing I like to do. That's a lot of stuff. I finished most of it when I was sick.
All right.
To be honest. You want books?
We can do books. I'm still on an audiobook kick, just because I can listen to them when I commute to work. So I've said before, like, my new commute to work is pretty short.
10 minutes.
It's just like 10 minutes on the bus. And then walking downtown, where I don't have my earbuds in when I'm walking downtown, because I like to be aware of what's going on around me. But lately I've been trying, on days that I don't go to the gym, I try to walk a really good chunk of the way home.
Mm-hmm.
So once I'm sort of clear of the craziness of downtown, I can get in like a 3 mile walk, and then I usually will like hop on a bus the rest of the way. So I've been like getting a lot of audiobook in that way, even though like on my bus commute, I listen to like 10 minutes and then it's done. So I think I might have mentioned last time I was reading or listening to The Library Book by Susan Orlean, about the fire at the Central Library in LA. And I got to visit the Central Library when I went to LA, which was really cool. Thought it was an interesting book. She goes off on a lot of tangents. I found all the tangents to be really intriguing and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely thought like halfway through it, like, where are we going, Susan? Like, I mean, she really just like, there's no thread that she is above following. So, but what ends up happening over the course of looking at the fire and looking at the library and all these different things that happened is she does sort of give you, by extension, a little bit of like a history of the city of Los Angeles, certainly a very exhaustive history of the city of Los Angeles library system in the lives of the head librarians. Dips into like how the role of librarian has become so gendered and how it used to be considered like a man's job, and mm-hmm. how that's shifted, and how seeing librarians now as like information, like how technology has made librarians more of like, like information seeker roles, that now is sort of transitioning back now where it's becoming less gendered again. So I just thought all these little tangents she went down, like learning about like the first city librarian in Los Angeles, like they were really interesting. It was just, there was a lot of interesting stuff, but it just did not have any structure to it at all. The next one we did was for my book club, which is The Book of Speculation. And I've forgotten the author's name. I think it's like Erica Swiler or something like that. And I did not like it at all. And if it had not been an audiobook, I would have set it down after the first 10 minutes of reading and never picked it back up again, because it was hackneyed. Like, the story is of, it's being narrated by a man, like an adult man whose mother had been like a carnival mermaid, and she had drowned when he was like in his late teens. Leaving him to care for his steadily more alcoholic father and his sister. And it's now years later, and he receives a book. He's also a librarian, so there's a librarian theme here. He receives a book in the mail that maybe has some connection to his family. And then, so you start getting sections that are of this from this book, or the story that is sort of revealed in this book. The book is a management log for a carnival from like the late 1700s in America. So you learn about like this boy who is like abandoned and to raise himself like as a feral child in the woods, who gets brought into the carnival, and a girl who's also like brought in to be a mermaid. So there's all this sort of, magical realism in that, like, the mermaids are really mermaids, or a sort of water, like, they're descended from water sprites or something, and the boy has some sort of magical properties that are never really used in the book. He grows up and he's mute and there's a curse and blah, blah, blah. But it was all like the minute the book started, it was like, oh yeah, okay. You knew exactly what was going to happen. It was just really obvious and, it wasn't interesting. And the characters were not well developed at all. I think the last, did I talk about there last time? Ooh, did I? I'm trying to look at my notes here. I don't know if I talked about it. So, because the book we'd read for our book club, maybe I didn't. Okay, I apologize if I'm going over this twice. I think I skipped that. We had done There by Tommy Orange, which is amazing. He is a native author, and it is a set. It appears to be at first a set of vignettes of the lives of various native people living in Oakland. So the through line is less, sort of the typical what you'd think of as like telling the story of being Native American, like sort of the Sherman Alexie root of their like life on the reservation. Blah, blah, blah. And instead it's much more about like being, the experience of being poor and in an urban environment, but also being Native and like what that, contributes to, or the way that alters their lives. And a lot of, so you're meeting all these different characters and like a lot of the themes are like, whether they don't feel like they're like Indian enough or they're too, just all this sort of questioning of how they fit into the Native American community or how they fit into the community at large of Oakland. But each voice, each character is so wonderfully drawn. And even though you're only with them for like these little vignettes, these little moments, they'll share like one little story from their life. And it does sort of come together later to be a little more interconnected, but, you get such a sense of them as characters just from these little bits and pieces, like stunningly. So like it was just, and it was really moving. It was really beautiful. It was really interesting, funny, sad, like everything. But the thing that I just kept coming back to is like the deftness of his writing was incredible. Like you fully believed in all of these different people. They were all completely fleshed out and it came through in the characters completely. Book of Speculation, total opposite. The characters are flat. They have no personality. Each one is sort of assigned a personality quirk and that's supposed to be like their character. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy's low-key California guy with tattoos. Ooh.
I hear that. yes.
You know?
Me.
You know,
it's me.
Uptight librarian. You know, it was just like, it was so, everything that happened in the book was so obvious. It was
I have met uptight Californians.
And, yes. Before, so. And I've met low-key tattooed librarians, so yeah. Go figure. It was just really lazy. It was just boring. Anyway, don't recommend. After that, I listened to, I know Audible has just come out with a new version of Northanger Abbey. This is not it, but that new one has got like this all-star cast, like Emma Thompson and I can't remember who else is doing the reading for it, but this is an old free one. I think I got from Amazon ages ago. And I've, I've never read Northanger Abbey. It's the only Jane Austen I haven't read.
It's like the shortest Jane Austen book, too.
Well, I never read it because, and this is just like my weird, like completist thing. Like the way I can't just watch an episode of a TV show in the middle of a series, like I must start at the beginning. And I know that Northanger Abbey is a parody of a particular style of sort of gothic romance. And in particular, there's a lot of making fun of the Mystery of Udolpho.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt like I, like to really appreciate Northanger Abbey, I should really read some of those books first.
No.
I know, but it's like I'm never going to do that because I really don't like those gothic novels.
And if you've read anything even similarly in the vein of any of those, then you're going to understand what
but
she's
saying. It's my weird thinking, like where it's like with the stash, like I can't knit this. Like I make these weird rules for myself that I know I don't need to have, but there they are. But so Northanger Abbey. Totally delightful. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Laughing out loud on the bus a lot listening to that. And we are, Wes and I are taking a trip, back to England, this fall. And I had wanted to go to Bath, and I had said, like, that was one of the things I really wanted to do. We're just going to be in London. And I was like, I want to take a day trip to Bath. And then, you know, much of the story of in Northanger takes place in Bath. So now I'm like, now I really want to go to Bath. And then I just started listening to a couple days ago, to Pachinko by, Min Lee, I think.
Yeah.
So it is a family history story that begins like early 1900s in Korea. And yes, it is quite good so far. It's very, very richly drawn. I'm really curious like where it's going, because I assume we're going to follow this family line up till about now. So yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot so far, but I'm only a little of a way into it so far.
Cool beans.
Yeah. You, what have you been reading?
A lot of stuff, but I can't remember if I actually talked about these already, because I can't remember exactly when I read them. Did I talk about the river last time? About the boys on the canoe trip?
I don't remember.
Okay. I usually kind of go back and listen to the episode. Bye. Last episode.
Can look at show notes.
Yeah. I know I didn't talk about Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
No, not yet.
It's very good. It's, he's writing it as kind of like a long form letter to his son about being black in America. And that is really good. Highly recommend. Read Firestarter by Stephen King. There's also a movie starring Drew Barrymore when she's a little girl. Which I have read a bit of Stephen King. And I think what I like is his like drug-addled days, like the 70s and early 80s. That's my preferred Stephen King period. So Firestarter is like thriller, fast-moving. It's about a little girl who has pyrokinesis. And the government's trying to like track her and her dad down, because her dad and her mom, who has since died, not the dad, the dad's alive, in the book, were in, like, a drug study, like, using LSD and stuff, when they were in college, for, like, $400 or $200 or something. And then they both got weird powers,
And as then, happens if you take LSD.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And then they got married, and then they had a daughter, and the daughter's the pyrokinetic girl.
Yes.
So, but it's, like, super fast-moving and, like, easy to read, obviously, because Stephen King could be edited more, which is what I say every time. Did you see if I read that or not?
I did not see that you had read it. The books I had made.
Okay, because I read it in, like, a day. It was really good. It's called The River, and it's by Peter Heller. It was one of the Pete picks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two college-age boys who are taking a long... I think they're taking, like, a quarter off of school so they can extend this trip where they're traveling by canoe along a series of lakes in North America. And I think it's into Canada, if not just in Canada, because I can't... this was, like, probably pretty soon after we recorded the last time, which is, like, 2 months ago. So they're paddling along... And, they see some weird weather patterns and, like, animals moving in ways they don't normally. So, like, one of them climbs up to the top of a tree. There's a big forest fire coming. So they're like, okay, this is how we're gonna deal with our trip. We're gonna move it along a little faster. And then there's, like, some fog that happens after that. And they're paddling by another campsite where they see a man arguing with a woman. And they're like, should we stop? Should we not stop? And they're like, well, you know, this seems just like an argument. We'll keep going. But then the next morning, they see the man go by without the woman. So it's like thriller, forest fire, adventure, nature kind of thing. And I really liked it. Very fast moving.
Okay.
Very fast moving. So if you're like into kind of true crimey stuff, but also you like nature descriptions, it's like a weird Venn diagram of things. When I first started it, I didn't know if I liked the writing style, but I got into the rhythm of it.
Pretty quickly, I guess.
Because I read it in like a day. So I recommend that. And I read The Water Cure by Sophie McIntosh.
Oh.
and it's kind of culty. It's about three sisters who grow up in isolation in this house with their mother and father, and women, and they've been told that outside of the boundary around the house and the ocean is like toxic, and men are basically going crazy and like hurting women, and they make women sick, like physically ill. So women come to them for this thing called the water cure and to reestablish their health. So in the very beginning of the story, the father has disappeared and the mother is there with three daughters, and it's told from each of their points of view. Mm-hmm. After a period of time, three men washed up on the, well, two grown men and like a boy wash up on shore, and then the mother disappears. Dun, dun, dun. So, but there's like weird rituals that the daughters do and the mother does with salt and weird kind of manipulative emotional things that the parents do. But it was very good. And I read that in just a couple days. Apologies for the background noise. I hate my neighbors. I read The Child Finder by Renee Denfeld, which is very depressing. It's about a woman who doesn't know her past because she was a found child. Like, the thing she remembers is, like, running out naked into a field and finding some like migrant farm workers and them taking her, and then she's raised in foster care by a very nurturing woman. So the foster care part's not the bad part, but her job is then kind of working with families and police officers and stuff to find missing children. And so like kind of the central story is that this little girl went missing 2 years ago in the snow when her family went out to get it cut down a Christmas tree in the forest, and she just like disappeared. And it's icky, just so you know. There's like child abuse and bad stuff. Yes. So, not for everyone, but I thought it was good. And then last night I started reading Moods by Louisa May Alcott, which is her first novel. Hmm. And the font is very small. I guess it was, like, her first novel, and then, like, 12 years later, she went back and she amended it. Oh. So there's a lot of footnotes. I think it's more of, like, a thing you read, like, when you're taking a literature class, not just, like, you would sit down and read. I'm just sitting down and read it because I like Louise May Alcott. And not just Little Women. She wrote some other stuff that's, like, more racy, which I think this is. So it's about a girl who's a tomboy, and she goes on a, like, a camping trip kind of thing down this river with her brother and to the friends. So there's like a love triangle, and then she marries the wrong one. I haven't got there yet because the font is really small, so it's going to take a long time to get anywhere. Yeah, but I like her writing, so some of the footnotes are interesting.
Cool.
Like, oh, his name is Max in the original one, and she changed it to Mark. Cool.
Okay.
Needed to know that for sure. So, yes, I've been doing a lot of reading lately.
Okay.
I mean, that was like 2 months of reading, I
guess. should we talk about Get Out? Let's see if it's been so long. So we were going to talk about it the last time, and then
and then 2 months went
to the library, and then blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I've seen it now. Yay!
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's totally amazing.
I think the thing that stuck with me the most about it, so, I mean, I think everybody's pretty clear on what's going on with it at this point, but a young black man with a white girlfriend goes off, you know, goes to the country.
Upstate somewhere.
It's upstate New York, yeah. Let's be real. Goes upstate New York to visit her family, and weird things are totally afoot. I hate giving stuff away about it, but I mean,
I think most people who would have seen it have seen it by now.
Yeah. But, I mean, so what I found so interesting about it, I mean, it's just really seeing something from someone else's perspective. I think for so long in American culture, certainly in American movies, you know, the the person to be scared of is so frequently, like, the black man.
Mm-hmm.
And that that is an archetype that, I mean, I think, fortunately, we're getting away from. But, you know, so for...
This turns it on its head. It's, like, the complete opposite. So, it's liberal, white folk, affluent white folks, basically.
Who are... I mean, the story is sort of this fantastical story, but I felt like the nugget of truth in it is that... that I'd never considered is how scary and uncomfortable it must be to be in white spaces as a black man.
Or as any, like, non-white person.
Yes. Yeah. But, I mean, I would say, though, like, it goes in particular, I mean, yeah. I think that, you know...
I think that's Jordan Peele's perspective.
Yeah. And sure. I think if you look at, you know, and if you look at, like, American attitudes, that there's certainly more... racist negative attitudes toward black men in particular, mm-hmm. And that they are seen more as like dangerous, the incarceration rates, etc. But so then, yes, to turn that on its head, but also to really appreciate like how uncomfortable being in white spaces must be, for someone in particular when you're the only non-white person there,
except for maybe the people serving food, which right. is like a thing he points out yes. very clearly.
Yeah, so I think the film does that. I mean, and there are great performances all around.
Oh my god, everybody's
so
amazing.
Good. The direction is so good. But, you know, he really, it's kind of funny, like, Wes and I were talking about, there's a moment where, like, the first kind of jump scare, little, like, bling, like, mm-hmm. scary, like, note, and the only thing that happens is someone walks by in the hallway. But it's still so scary, because oh, yeah. that atmosphere of tension of him... wanting to, you know, be on his good behavior and, like, kind of fit in. Also, like, when we talked about Sorry to Bother You, about code switching, and mm-hmm. there's, like, a really great moment in this also where he goes to talk to another black person, and that moment of, like, finally wanting to be at ease with himself and being able to approach someone and sort of speak in a shared yeah. language and not getting that.
Yeah. And that guy, the guy
is the star of Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
Lakeith Stanfield.
Yes.
Yes.
There you go.
I love him.
Good job.
I think he's great. He's great in this. He's really talented. I just really like him, but the cast all around are really great, but I thought He takes sort of a science fiction-y horror genre
mm-hmm.
to illustrate, like, really real feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that really powerfully watching it, and I thought that that was amazing. Super impressed.
I mean, it's one of my favorite movies yeah. now, so I've probably watched it 10 times. I did watch it with the director's commentary, which is super good, and if you've seen it and... want to know more about Jordan Peele, like how he came up with some of the stuff, because it was the first movie he ever directed and wrote, that it was probably really good. Like, apparently he's a big fan of The Shining, and mm-hmm. so he used the same color font as The Shining. And then that first pass when he's going through the house and he's taking him on a tour,
mm-hmm.
he's like mimicking that whole... Scatman Crawler is taking Jack on the tour of the Overlook okay. kind of thing. So there's a lot of mirroring with that.
Of course, I've never watched all The Shining because yeah. I am a scaredy cat.
But it's so good.
I know.
So
this was also, I was texting Aaron about it, that my younger son, who is even more of a scaredy cat than I am, watched it with me. Mm-hmm. And he's never seen anything even vaguely in the horror genre because he gets really... freaked out. So the two of us home alone watching it. And I was like,
it's good to have a support system for that.
It was terrible. Like, we needed to have a third person there to tell us when it was okay to look again. Because, like, I'm covering my face, he's covering his face, and it's like, wait, if neither of us are looking, well, then we don't know what we're missing.
Yeah. I mean, all of the, like, really, like, there's a very slow build-up, and, like, the really, like, traditionally horror, bloody, gory stuff is all in the last 15 minutes
right,
of the
movie.
Right,
and it's like 5 minutes of the movie. That's yeah. not really, I mean, And you can cover your face for it, like I did.
Yeah, so the other thing about the director's cut is he was talking about when he wrote the script. When he wrote the script, Obama was president. Mm-hmm. And so there was an alternate ending where he kills everyone. Mm-hmm. And then not his friend doesn't show up. Right. It's the cops. Yeah. And he gets sent to prison. Right. And he's like, I had to do that kind of thing. But once the current president was elected, he's like, we're going to change this narrative.
Because we're all sad enough.
Yeah. Well, I think it was just, like, what he would have been trying to accomplish with the first ending, like, during the Obama administration was not as, like, pertinent.
Yeah.
Once we got the president we got. So. Yeah. That was really interesting. I just love that movie so much. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about it.
It's really, like, pitch perfect in so many ways. Like,
and the pacing is so good, too. The pacing's really good. Yeah. And I personally love Caleb Landry Jones, who is, her gross brother.
Oh.
The one who's over...
So gross.
He's so gross. He's got this little mustache, and he's, like, every time we see him, he's drunk, basically. And he's, like... The thing that I liked about... He was in that vampire movie that I liked, Byzantium.
Oh, he was in that?
Yeah, he was the boy who had hemophilia.
Oh.
With Saoirse Ronan.
Okay, I didn't put that together at all. He's so freaking creepy in this. Oh, he's so creepy.
But what I liked about the character, how he was written, is that he was, like, the only overtly racist person in the family, and everyone else is like, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are, like, microaggressions and stuff. Right. Where everyone else is like, I would vote for Obama for a third term, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. But, like, he's the one who, and I think that he's the one who says the overt things, and I think it kind of lets off some pressure that's happening because the main character, like, knows how to deal with that kind of thing.
And not the really, like, polite but still really racist people.
Yeah. So it's just so good on so many levels. And, like, every time I watch it, I notice different things. It's just like, and that's why Jordan Peele can just take my money.
Yeah. Well, but then I saw the trailer for Us and I will not be watching that.
There are a lot of plot holes in Us. But
also more gore, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah, it's super bloody and violent.
And I just can't deal with, like, just seeing the scissors in the ad, I'm like, nope.
It's, like, really creepy, paired with very bloody, and lots of dad jokes.
Yeah, I can't do it.
It's super good. I really liked it, but there are, like, more plot problems, and I'm wondering if, But someone at the California retreat was like, well, I kind of wish Us was the first one and Get Out was the second. And I was like, without Get Out, there would be no Us. Like, if Us had happened, there'd be no Get Out kind of thing. Also, I've been watching the new Twilight Zone, which is really good and hosted by Jordan Peele. Yeah. I love it. So good. So that's Get Out and then my love for Jordan Peele and Us.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I mean, I could go on forever about all the stuff I've been watching, but I would like to mention, I finally watched, it's been on my to-watch list forever, The Hunt for Wilder People.
Oh, that's really good.
Because I'm, like, always talking about, like, I love Taika Waititi, but it's like, he's only directed, like, 3 feature films, and I'd only seen 2 of them, so I needed to shut up. Because I had started to watch the new TV series based on What We Do in the Shadows, which... I think I've only seen, like, 3 or 4 episodes. Super funny. Mm-hmm. Loving it. It's different than the movie. Different cast, different setting, but the same concept of vampire roommates. But Hunt for Wilder People is set in New Zealand, like, way out in the country, of a boy who has been in foster care, who's being sent to this farm as a new foster home. And it ends up being sort of like an adventure story. It felt very kind of Wes Anderson-ish, like meets Babe, meets Taika Waititi. So just really fun and
funny, but really touching. I wouldn't recommend it for, like, the people who get... They're in the wild. There's a lot of hunting, so don't... If that is upsetting to you, I think you might not enjoy that. But just super charming and sweet and funny and lovely. And I'd heard good things about it for ages, and I just had really not gotten around to seeing it. So I think I saw it on... I think it's on Hulu right now. Something else that I'm... When we were... Wes just happened to casually mention that, like, oh, yeah, he had signed up, like, I don't know, a year ago for CBS All Access. And for the last year, I've been railing, like, freaking CBS All Access. I really want to watch The Good Fight, which is the spinoff of The Good Wife. But I can't, and I'm not going to pay for that stupid subscription. And it turns out I was freaking paying for it this whole time. I just wasn't watching it. So I caught up on seasons 2 and 3 of The Good Fight. And let me just say that... It is the most meta of all meta shows ever. They are having so much fun making this show now. And the thing that I said the whole time I watched The Good Wife, which is, man, this should really be a musical because they shot in New York and it was all these like theater people. Mm-hmm. And there'd be a scene with like 5 famous actors who are all known for musical and theater. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, get them all to sing. And then in Good Fight, in season 3, they come up with excuses in every episode to have people sing. And it's cracking me. Like, every time it happens, it cracks me up. But it is just so funny. And the thing, too, is, like, for season 3, it's contemporaneous. It's so, like, there's an episode toward the end of the season where they're, like, waiting for the unredacted Mueller report to come out. And I'm just like, whoa. This is now. This just happened. But it is really, really funny. And it's interesting, too, because the main character, Diane Lockhart, who's played by Kristen Bransky, is working in this series at a majority black firm, historically, like, with all black founding partners. And so a lot of the, a lot of the issues, that... everywhere else people are dealing with race are coming out and being discussed and or being handled well or not being handled well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of interesting conversations happening within that show as well. But just really smart, really hilariously funny, like just how like TV inception they're getting with how meta everything is. But love that. Also, season 2 of Fleabag just came out, and that's an Amazon series. I know you don't do Amazon, but I love Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and season 2 is definitely a different tone than season 1. It is not quite as, like, all-out, insane, hilarious, crazy as season 1. It's a lot mellower, and I think I'd heard some people were kind of disappointed with that, but I actually thought it was very organic, and it made sense for the characters. And I still enjoyed it. Like, I just love the characters, so I love spending time with them. And then I also just watched the whole first season of Dead to Me. Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini on... it's a Netflix series.
I know, I was watching that.
Where they meet in a... like a... it's a widow whose husband was killed in a hit and run. And she meets another woman at a grief support group. And then things happen. So it's, I don't know. I liked a lot of it. Then I feel like it kind of got away from itself. And then it ends on a massive cliffhanger. So then it's like, okay, well, I don't even know what I think about this now. But anyway, that's kind of a short version of what I've been watching.
Chernobyl, HBO miniseries.
I don't know if I can face that.
Lots of disgusting makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really well done.
Did you ever listen to the This American Life, where they interview the widow of one of the firefighters? Mm-hmm.
That's not my jam.
No, because it's... because just that...
Well, like, one of the characters is a wife of a firefighter.
Right, right. I know yeah. that's, like, that story is told. But, like, just listening to her story being told was harrowing enough. I don't know if I could deal with seeing it happen.
If you are bothered by physical illness things is definitely not for you.
Yeah.
So far, really good. Like, everyone in it is really good. It's Stellan Skarsgård, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And Emily Watson? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess her character is kind of... her character wasn't a real person. They kind of use her character to put together a bunch of scientists.
Composite.
Thank you. Of a lot of scientists who were doing work during this time. So, it's really good. But again, if you don't want to see very realistic radiation poisoning things, then probably not for you. Yeah. But yeah, very good. And that's a mini series. I watched Chambers on Netflix and I really liked it. People I follow on Instagram were talking about it and I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. It's about a girl who gets an emergency heart, transplant from another teenage girl who was electrocuted. She gets a heart and then of course weird stuff starts happening. And the main character is like an indigenous girl and her uncle and they're poor. And then, like, the heart donor is, like, rich, white, affluent people. There's, like, some culty, new agey, weird stuff happening. I think it's, like, 10 or 12 episodes.
Huh.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it. Some of it was, like, a little meh, but overall good. Lily Taylor is in it. And Uma Thurman's the white girl's mom.
Oh.
And... yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's a lot of, like, a diverse cast, which I really liked. And a lot of, like, class clashing and everything that goes along with that. So it wasn't just, like, spoopy stuff. It was, like, this other broader narrative, which I really liked. I watch Her Smell, which is available on Hoopla, and it's so good. So
I just saw, like, an ad for it, and I was like, I gotta figure out where this is streaming, and then you posted that.
Which is, like, part of the Toronto Film Festival, I guess. It's Elizabeth Moss as the lead singer of this girl punk group, and in the first half of the movie, she's, like, spiraling out of control, and then... kind of, like, hits the wall super hard trying to record an album and basically loses everything to lawsuits. And then it's, like, the second half of the movie is, like, her kind of coming back into herself and figuring out her crap. She's really good.
Yeah, she's always really good.
Hoopla is a digital streaming service. I watch it for free through the library. So if your library has things like Libby or Overdrive or Canopy is another streaming service that has, like, lots of documentaries on it. Chances are Hoopla is available through your library too. So, and they got a lot of indie stuff. So does Canopy. And it's Canopy with a K and Hoopla two O's.
Hoopla with a hoop.
Yes. And you can also borrow music and other things through Hoopla. It's not just movies, but you just have a short period to watch them. I think it's like 3 days or something. Mm-hmm. And you get like 15 credits a month, I think. Something like that. To borrow stuff. So I recommend that movie. I liked it.
Cool.
Last, definitely not least, Gentleman Jack. I love it. It's an HBO show that's new with Cerianne Jones as... Ann Lister, and it's a period piece, and based on true person, Ann Lister, and it's just, like, so good. I love it. I
keep hearing great things about it.
It's amazing. Basically, she has, so she's historically kind of the first out lesbian, and she kept, like, all these journals that were coded in a combination I think of Greek in algebra or Latin in algebra that they couldn't read for, like, until the 1930s, and then someone cracked the code, and she basically detailed every minute of her life, including her sexual exploits, relationships, taking care of her estate. She's also, like, the owner of her estate, Shibden. And she had, like, a marriage with another woman named Anne Walker. And it's kind of starts where Anne Lister is coming home from a failed relationship where her girlfriend got married, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's coming home after that. And then she starts getting into the estate management and doing some upgrades to it. And meets Anne Walker. And they start a friendship. A very friendly friendship. that morphs into a relationship. And it's very good. And everyone is amazing. And she's, like, a very straight talker. And she's hella smart. And men don't like her because she's smarter than them. And she's, like, outthinking everyone all the time. But also, like, kind of abrasive. But also takes care of her people. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm like, it's, like, so refreshing to have, like, a female lead who's not heteronormative, who's also, like, super well-rounded because you see her very vulnerable. Like, she's just, like, a complete person and not just... Yes.
And not, like, a perfect person.
Not a perfect person at all. Yeah. Like, she's kind of an asshole sometimes. So...
That is refreshing.
Yeah. It's very refreshing. And that's probably what I like so much about it. Yeah. Also, I just am a sucker for a good period piece, and she wears, like, all black. And she wears, like, a little, you know, I was talking crap about top hats, but she wears, like, this little top hat, like a lady's top hat. Then, like, all the other women have these, like, enormous puffed sleeves and, like, bright butterfly colors and giant skirts. And she's, like, in her sensible, like, kind of great coat style, wearing all black. It's very good. Recommend. It makes me so happy.
Yay.
I can't wait for, I think it comes out on, like, Sundays, so it's up on Monday to stream.
This happens to me with HBO series. If I'm watching them, like, when they're still, like, current, is that I watch, like, the first two episodes, and then I forget, like, oh, I have to keep checking back.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened to me with Westworld. Like, I watched the first two episodes, then I just never, to season two, and then I never went back to check on it.
Well, that's a long, I mean, some of that was like pauses for my annoying neighbors, but I guess that's what happens after we don't record for a couple months. So that's us.
You can check show notes at doublenit.net like I did during this podcast recording. Or join us on our Ravelry group of Doublenit podcast fans. And
we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Ish. Bye.
Bye.